Oh, it's good to have Rich back. Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the roundtable and our panel discussion for this Thursday, the 25th of October. It is Thursday, and we will talk about Thursday stuff. And we have a lot to talk about, and we have a lot of people to talk about it with. Let me quickly go around the room and introduce everybody, and then I'll remind you how you can become a part of the program, and then we'll do the program. Okay, Ira Fussfeld is here. Ira is the Daily Freeman Publisher Emeritus. Good morning, Ira. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Joe and everyone. Nice to be back.
Nice to have you back. Judy Patrick also with us today, like Ira, fresh from a media project taping, so they've already done their morning workout. They're ready to go.
Morning.
Good morning,
yes,
Judy.
We were fresh
How
when we
you?
Went in. We weren't fresh when we came out.
Judy is Vice President for Editorial Development at the New York Press Association, and we welcome her this morning. Vera Akarios-Kelly joins us, a professor of comparative politics at Siena College in Loudonville, New York. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. Thank you for introducing me with such an excited voice.
Well, I try to do that, at least for the first like 4 minutes of the show. I try to be as excited and upbeat as possible. Sitting in our junior section, we have...
How low can you get?
Rich Honan is with us, a corporate attorney, and we have him at, you know, we got a new mic in the studio. What we didn't get is a new chair. So we have to work on that. But
so what you have to understand is, and I know we're talking about serious things this morning, so I don't want to, but I will, you have to understand I'm sitting 2 feet lower than everybody else, you know, at the table
true.
Right now.
And right
so
next
I think
to
it's
me,
a conservative
so I
thing.
Have to really
yes.
look down.
I look even shorter, yes.
Well, it's great to have you here. Pleasure
to be here.
We make you feel welcome, don't we? All right. In the next couple of minutes, hopefully we can correct that,
yes.
and get you up to the, so you can actually not have your chin on the table. And Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Hey.
All right. Well, let me start off by reminding you that you can join us, panel@wamc.org, and my guess, I don't know, I'm just guessing, but my guess is that you'll have a lot to say today because there's a lot going on. So this story unfolded as we were talking on the radio yesterday. We were sort of watching this in real time, but the true severity of it did not come to light until after we were off the air. Pipe bombs were sent to several prominent Democrats, including former President Barack Obama and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, setting off an intense investigation on Wednesday into whether figures vilified by the right were being targeted. From Washington to New York to Florida to Los Angeles, the authorities intercepted a wave of crudely built devices that were contained in manila envelopes. And before dawn on Thursday, investigators discovered that another package had been sent to Robert De Niro, the actor and filmmaker who has been an outspoken critic of President Trump. The package arrived at the building in Tribeca in Lower Manhattan that houses Mr. De Niro's production company as well as his restaurant. It was similar to those discovered a day earlier, also believed to contain an explosive device. The list is this. Devices sent to Hillary Clinton in Chappaqua, New York. George Soros, Katona, New York. John Brennan, care of CNN, even though he didn't work there, in New York City. Robert De Niro in New York City. Joe Biden in Delaware. Maxine Waters in Washington. Barack Obama in Washington. Eric Holder was supposed to go to him. However, it had an incomplete address, so it was sent back to the return address that was on all of the packages, or I think all the packages. We don't know if it was on the Soros package, for Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the congresswoman and former head of the Democratic Party. That went to Sunrise, Florida. And then late yesterday, there was word that another bomb was released, was found at the office of Maxine Waters in Los Angeles. So that is basically what we have as of right now. And the FBI has said that there may certainly be more out there. This all comes less than 2 weeks before the midterm elections. The discovery of the pipe bombs reverberated across the country, already on edge, stirring anew questions about whether political discourse had grown vitriolic. Let us move for a moment to the president, who said earlier in the day on Wednesday, "In these times, we have to unify, we have to come together and send one very clear, strong, unmistakable message that acts or threats of political violence of any kind have no place in the United States." He continued in the same vein later Wednesday at a rally in Wisconsin, encouraging, quote, "all sides to come together in peace and harmony," before taking aim at the news media. Yeah. "The media also has a responsibility," he said, "to set a civil tone and stop the endless hostility and constant negative and oftentimes false attacks." That is where we are. Who would like to begin? Alan?
Oh, okay. You know, here's the deal. This is a president who has, in fact, from the very beginning, said things like when leading a protester out of his meeting, "beat him up." Beat him up, that's physical violence, folks, and it sets a tone from the president of the United States. Look, we don't know who has done this. It may be somebody who is unstable. And is just doing it, but the tone has unmistakably been set by the president of the United States. Now his acolytes, you know, the Rush Limbaughs, the professional guys, and the Hannitys, are going around saying it was probably a Democrat who wanted to get sympathy for his own during the midterms. Frankly, I don't see how that can be, but I'm willing to say that we don't know yet. But it's a terrible thing, and we have moved to a place, and I hold the president accountable for it.
Well, there are many things we don't know. I think it's presumed that it is a disaffected Republican who has been motivated by the president's overheated language.
Why do you say disaffected?
Meaning somebody who hates the Democrats. And that seems to me an obvious possibility. Perhaps a less obvious possibility is that it's a foreign actor who is trying to sow discord and have the people in this country at each other's throats. I'm confident that the FBI will get to the bottom of it. I think, to reiterate part of what Alan said, the president is failing miserably if he's attempting to bring this country together. His language has been divisive from the beginning. And at a time like this, when there are people who are scared with justification about what they may find in their mailboxes, this guy is not stepping up, and he is not trying to bring the – I mean, for him to get up at the White House yesterday and make some comment about now's the time to unifying the country, it's almost laughable because we know he's reading it off of a script.
But in fairness, we would have torn him apart if he didn't say
it. Yeah, he said more than he has been saying, but much less than he should have said.
But I'm sorry, and I know we have a lot of other panelists. But it is interesting that he gets up, says we have to unify, we have to all be together. But let's face it, it's the press that needs to bear some of the responsibility here, which is a theme that he has been saying from the very beginning. And that is really
so
awful.
In my view, I've come to the conclusion that it is entirely ridiculous to expect this president to sound presidential. He once in a while has some aide that gets to him and says, you know, you need to really sound a little bit differently today. But really, our standards have become so low. It is truly appalling where we are today. I find myself in the classroom a lot just discussing where we're at and people's fears about where this country is headed with the extreme polarization. And President Trump's skill, unfortunately, is to pursue polarization. And whatever language he uses for just a few sentences related to coming together and unifying as a nation is just unbelievable. It is just not representative of anything he stands for.
Vera, what are the students saying?
Well, the students are saying this is really worrisome. This is not something that we want to see in our future. We want to have discussions. We want to have debates. We want to talk about issues. And all it is about scaremongering. And they're not embracing, in the vast majority, this kind of level of conversation, and they're often feeling left out and not listened to.
I think there's something about when you say the words that the president said both yesterday and yesterday during the day and then last night at the rally. There's something about it that rings hollow when about halfway through it he turns to the crowd and said, aren't you proud of me? I'm staying on. Yeah, I'm saying what
I'm making fun of
it. I'm saying what I'm supposed to say.
And he put out another fake news tweet this morning.
Yeah, I often look at from afar. I've seen these rallies progress, and I often think of them as like WWF, Worldwide Wrestling Federation,
of which Trump is a graduate.
Right. You know that everybody thinks it's all in good fun. We're just but. This is real. A lot of people could have been hurt or may yet to be hurt. Pipe bombs, people handle those pipe bombs. I mean, this is not fun. This is not, you know, just for the sport of it. And it's very, very distressing.
And if they go off or don't go off, they're anxiety-inducing and terrorizing. It's a crime. I reject that kind of use of violence, either emotional or physical. It is unacceptable. And we really need to address those kinds of responses on the political level.
Rich.
Yeah, I agree, especially with that last point that, whether bombs go off or whether they don't. I mean, the damage and the harm is, you know, the fear and, as much as anything, obviously, you know, thankfully, no one was physically hurt, but I agree with you that the damage done by that kind of fear is just as bad, and in some ways maybe more pervasive, and maybe all more encompassing. I do think that part of the problem is kind of the discussion that we've heard here today, which is everybody in the first sentence says, yeah, it's really bad, and then everybody in the second sentence says, and it's this guy's fault, and I'm sure if we were on a right wing station, everybody would say, no, it's the left wing's fault. And I think that I'd like to see the president stay more on message of what his original statement was, whether you think it came from him or not. I'd like to see everybody do that and just say, I'd like to divorce this event from whatever the underlying issues are and just say, no matter what it is, it's unacceptable period. And then we could talk about
point. Point taken. Yeah. But isn't that harder to do when the individuals who were targeted were the very individuals who were targeted during the rallies of the president?
I think it's hard to do. I think we've demonstrated it's hard to do. The answer is yes, but I think it's hard to divorce the emotions from the passion that we feel about the issues. I think that. Look, in a more perfect world, everybody with one voice would say, I don't care who's doing it. I don't care why they're doing it. It's unacceptable. It's unacceptable whether it's coming from the right or the left or a foreign actor.
Well, I think everyone agrees with that.
Yeah, it's distressing, though, how quickly people say that. And then they move on to the next part of their agenda.
And who's responsible for that is the person who holds the highest office in the land. If Trump cannot set the tone for a shift and follow it up with action, namely, he had opportunities to highlight things and policies that actually led to collaboration regarding the opium issue. He had the opportunity to highlight something where people came together. Instead, he does not pursue that.
So Rich, do you agree with Vera or not? Do you think that this president is responsible in large part for the kind of animus that is going on in this country?
I don't. I think that I think there's a response. He's a different kind of president, and obviously he says things that are boorish and rude and unpresidential. For you to say that is the same thing we said about the last president.
No, but so you think that there's an equivalency between this president and Obama?
Yeah, I think
reasonable
absolutely.
Obama, who never raised his voice, who never never said to somebody, take this guy out and beat him up.
I think both of them recognized and then exploited divisions in American society.
Can you imagine the favorable response that most in this country would provide. If there was a gathering in the White House today and Trump walked into the East Room followed by Clinton and Obama, just was limited to the two former presidents who were targeted and the current president, and they got up on the stage and said, we have our political differences, but this kind of violence or potential violence is not what we believe in. We're going to cut it out, or it has to stop right here. I think he would get more votes, frankly, Trump, than he's getting by just going to his base. But there's no sense of moral indignation on Trump's part, and there's certainly no sense, and there hasn't been throughout his presidency or his campaign prior to the presidency, of him having any kind of leadership and the moral fortitude to do that sort of thing. This is what a country and our country historically has had in their presidents. Agree with them or disagree with them, they knew how to rally the country, and they were leaders.
We're going to hold you there. We have to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok is here. Ira Fussfeld, Judy Patrick, Vera Akarius-Kelly, and Rich Honan, at least until 10 o'clock. We'll be back right after this. Quote of the break, with this many people, we can do a line dance. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable. Nice to have you all with us. We have a big group here, and we welcome your letters as well. Panel at WAMC.org. And, of course, we're talking about the events of yesterday that are, of course, also going into today as the investigation continued in a nationwide manhunt for the bomber goes on. And we will go to some letters which will further the conversation. Go ahead, Alan.
And Tim writes, Yutu, beloved panel, yesterday's super typhoon Yutu slammed into American territories of Saipan and Tinian. Predictions before the storm hit suggested wind gusts would exceed 217 miles per hour. The weather monitors on Tinian stopped working at about 130 miles per hour. I had heard, by the way, that it got up to 180, but I don't know if that's true. I have not heard the administration make any mention of helping our American territories in the wake of this disaster. What will it take for Trump to consider the possibility that the climate crisis is real? Tim in Stone Ridge. Clay says, panel, the bomb attack has all the earmarks of the Russian campaign disruption, large scale, slightly out of focus in its aim, reminiscent of old media attacks on Facebook, misspellings, lots of planning, but kind of off, almost as if it were done by a foreign power. You know, everybody's going to project into this thing anything that they want. I used to know a woman who wrote stuff and always purposely misspelled words and things, so somebody would think she was something that she wasn't. It happens. Frank says, October surprise. Dear panel, it seems to me that the recent bomb threats are a gift to the Democrats as an October surprise. This act proves the danger to America that is Donald Trump. I feel he is totally responsible for these terrorist acts. He's constant daily instigator of hate, violence, and turmoil. Of course, he deflects the problem on the media. I am old enough to remember that Silvio Berlusconi used to constantly blame the Italian media for his political problems. Trump is a dangerous fascist fool, and we need to bring him to justice. Isn't there any law against inciting violence? Trump is guilty. That's from Frank. And then we heard from John, who said, I don't know how, but I knew that Trump would find a way to make half a dozen or so pipe bombs aimed squarely at others all about him. And I wasn't wrong. With his broadside against the press, he's claiming that their coverage of his mountain of lies has sparked the anger that produced these pipe bombs. If you listen carefully, he's almost, but not quite, excusing them as a natural byproduct of the opposition to him. One wonders what's next. And Alan says, mainstream media and Trump. Panel, Joe, I want you to check in on this if you can. Panel, worthy of note is that Fox News has been number one in total views for 16 straight years.
I think it depends on the time frame, but as far as the primetime lineup, I believe that's correct.
Yes, but also there's a division between everybody else of people. So if you're looking at views, it would seem to me that, yeah, if you want to, if you have a conservative mentality, and if you're one of the 40-something percent that are Trumpers, you're going to watch Fox, whereas a lot of other Americans are watching a lot of other things.
And also, I wanted to point out that young people don't watch any of it.
Yeah,
they don't watch any TV. They don't watch any news. They might read something online, but they're certainly not watching any TV.
Yeah, Fox's ratings are very strong, but they still are a relatively small number of people in the media universe.
Shall I continue?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Unifier. Let's be clear, says Bob from Albany, about Trump's unifying comments at yesterday's rally. These comments were written by someone else, and the way Trump read them off the teleprompter was intended to communicate to his base. They didn't really mean what he was saying, but he had to say it anyhow.
No, I don't like that.
Every president's comments are written by somebody else.
And also, some people are better than reading off a teleprompter than others. But, okay, go ahead.
I've always thought that should actually be illegal. I've always thought that if you're either going to be in office or run for office, the one rule we should have is you have to write your own stuff.
You know, and you make a good point. If you have to do it for
he doesn't.
Yes, he does.
No, I agree. It's a great point.
If you have to do it for the moth, you should have to do it as President of the United
Except
States.
Except for the
you
President know, of the United States does have a few duties, and writing speeches takes a long time.
No, I understand.
So this may not
be very efficient
use of one's time.
No. The response to that is... And his or her most important duty is communicating with the American people. There's nothing more important a president can be doing than writing the remarks that are either going to go to the American people or to Congress or to people overseas.
Well,
I think that's the most important thing
they
do.
Well, you can have ideas. I mean, I once asked Ted Sorensen if he wrote profiles in Pep in Courage for JFK, and he said, I can't answer that question.
Yeah.
And by saying I can't answer that question, he was answering the question, if you think about it.
I think that's one of Trump's one of the reasons for his popularity with his base is because they know he's really talking to them, and it's not canned or not written by somebody else.
I think that is true. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I just think that should be. I think that would be a cool law to have.
Yeah. Just one of the rules.
A modest proposal.
Just the only rule.
Yeah.
Well,
you have to be 35. There are other rules.
He might have to cut back on his golfing adventures then.
Okay.
And his TV.
And Bob says. We did that already. Okay. And Alexander says, good morning. Obama ran on change. This moment needs to be remembered in 2020. Unity, civility, and kindness will be the message that wins now. I doubt that very much. I think he'll go right back to where he's been. And Eric, our good friend Eric, who I respect so much. List of bomb targets. Good morning, panel. I find the people not in... included on the list of Democratic luminaries to whom bombs were mailed to be interesting. No Michael Avenatti, Robert Mueller, I'm so sorry, or Tom Steyer. Is there another wave, perhaps more lethal? Clearly voter intimidation, waiting for a follow-up note. This is where nationalism heads, and that's from Eric in Richmond.
Well, we don't know if those people are targeted yet. They're still finding these things.
Right, no Senator Schumer.
Right. Or Pelosi.
Yeah. Susan says, Obama's exploitation. Can Rich please expand on his assertion that Obama exploited divisions in this country? I'm just not seeing it. Thanks from Sue.
I think that there was a lot of rhetoric about, you know, the millionaires and billionaires, excuse me, versus the people on the street. I think there was a lot of rhetoric about, you know, cops versus people living in inner cities. I don't know. Maybe that's what politics is figuring out where there is dissonance. And addressing, I guess that's addressing issues.
And don't forget the worst of all, which was his insistence that Americans have decent health care. It was a little sardonic, something in my voice there.
Yeah, and I mean, on the police question, I mean, this country has a violence issue. I'm just pointing that out. And if you're African-American and look from that perspective, you worry about your young people and your sons in particular. So I would say this was a major issue to be addressed and to be responded to, and especially when it comes to stand your ground laws.
Yeah, no, and I agree. It's interesting that I really draw no conclusions from this. I've noticed that under, you know, we had lots of issues with basically African American men being targeted by white cops, and now we're hearing more of cops being targeted And I don't draw a conclusion from that. It just seems to be a cycle. I don't feel like I'm hearing as many stories about African American men being targeted like we did. But now it's like the pendulum has swung the other way.
Well, I mean,
and I'm always hearing about cops being shot
at. What a surprise that is! It's sort of like the question about the situation of women. It's not been discussed for hundreds of years, and it suddenly emerges. I would establish that parallel. How about the fact that people that have not had a voice suddenly gain more representation on media and discuss social issues, and they emerge as central questions about who we are as members of this society?
Yeah, but Vera, I think Rich's point, not to put words in his mouth because I never could do that, but I think Rich's point here is that the messaging becomes very different depending on who the president of the United States is.
Yeah. Well, no doubt about it. But the difference between Trump and Obama, among many differences, is the language that Trump uses. This, I'll call it street language, that is just so unpresidential. I mean, one could argue that Obama was very provocative in a number of different ways, but Trump, rather Obama, was his speeches were thoughtful, sometimes too wordy, but certainly articulate. I don't know that you can use those words to describe what Trump is doing.
And the other point I want to make, President Obama was certainly no deep left-wing ideological person, because he even changed his own opinion on gay and lesbian rights.
Right. Well, the right would probably argue with you about that, but I don't object to a president who changes his views on the fly if he's evolved.
It makes sense.
But be presidential, be a leader,
yes.
Try to be thoughtful. I don't think those words can be applied to Trump.
I think he's thoughtful. I think that I agree with you that one of the problems I think that we all have getting even those people like me who support the president is that he's not presidential in really any sense that we've ever been used to. I think that he shows some leadership qualities that are presidential, but I agree. Look, we've said this all the time. If somebody had Trump's ideas but could couch them the way Obama, who looked and sounded and had the presence of Obama, but had the kind of ideas that we could get behind, that would be the perfect person. That's why I watched The West Wing on Netflix, because that's, that's the president I want.
Yeah. Mike says, where is the Democratic or Republican leadership? Why is there no one standing up loudly and correctly blaming this president and his administration for creating this environment of hate? This is directly Trump's fault. Pardon me. He feeds off this hate. He loves distraction. He loves fear. His, quote, rallies are nothing more than a breeding ground for hate. Americans want someone to stand up and directly ask Trump to be leader and president. And that's Mike from Saratoga Springs. But, Mike, I have to say, I saw Joe Biden attempting to do that just yesterday or the day before. And doing it, I thought, rather effectively, standing up before his own crowd and listing the number of transgressions of the kind you've said from here. So anyway, Carol.
So I wanted to say,
we're gonna take a break, but go ahead.
One of the prior readers mentioned Silvio Berlusconi, and
that's
he
right.
may be perhaps the best person to compare President Trump to, because Silvio Berlusconi uses very similar populist techniques. And we should also watch the presidential elections in Brazil. If this particular individual will be elected, we will have a new level of horrific populism in the largest and most powerful economy in Latin America. So this is a pattern that we see. We see it in Duterte. We may see it in Brazil. We certainly see it from President Erdogan in Turkey. And this is just not a direction that would be beneficial to any democratic development
Rich.
In the world.
No, I was just gonna say, I don't disagree with a lot of that. I understand it.
Well, Berlusconi and Trump share the same hair products and apparently the same taste in women.
Now we have to go to break.
I wanted to end on a George Costanza.
Well, tell John who wrote in that I lowered my chair.
we got a letter that said Rich should be ashamed of himself to say that Trump doesn't incite violence. He should lower his chair.
So I have lowered my chair.
So he lowered his chair. All right, we're gonna take a break. We'll be back and we'll continue right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Judy Patrick, Vera Akarios-Kelly, and Rich Honan. And we welcome your letters. Panel at WABC.org. We have a few more, and then we'll move on to other stuff.
We do. I'll go fast.
All right.
Carol says, news cycle, these bombs are horrible. However, Trump getting a pass on Khashoggi, MBS, Putin, and the administrative memo on health care coverage due to our only being able to coverage one topic at a cover one topic at a time, and that's from Carol.
I would add there were people on the right who were saying that the left was using this as a tactic
sure.
to get the caravan off the
that's
the main story yeah. too. But go ahead.
And there are also those who believe the Democrats were responsible for the caravan. That's
correct.
Just too much nonsense out there.
And Tom says, pipe bomb, don't rush to assume anything. The pipe bomb mailing may have been orchestrated just to make Trump look magnanimous. We have to unify, in quotes. The message to a small slice of voters might be, see that? Trump really is a decent guy and deserves my vote. That's from Tom. And Kevin says, different, Boris, yeah, right. Come on, Rich, Trump is the arsonist of great American anger, says Kevin, who often is right about things.
Good line.
Yeah, it is a good
That's
line.
That's a good line.
Yeah. And then here, Dean says, Oxum's razor. Come on, guys, you're being much too accommodating when you offer a list of possible bombers. The simplest explanation is a rightist who feels empowered by Trump's rhetoric.
You know, the bottom line is the person ultimately responsible for this is the person who sent them.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And also, we don't know who that is.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Right. And I still say, don't be surprised if it's a foreign actor.
And Keith says, covering their butts. Good morning, panel. After the partisan and rigged FBI investigation into Kavanaugh and Dr. Ford, can we trust the FBI to investigate these attempted political bombings? Could the man who is responsible for the executive branch interfere with this investigation like he did with the high-profile FBI investigation? Will this investigation be a butt-covering exercise if he doesn't like the likely outcome? This is a line of questioning that the FBI opened up themselves. Opened themselves up to when they went along with Kavanaugh's sham. They can no longer be considered nonpartisan. They violated America's trust in their institution, and that's from Keith.
And I want to say to that is exactly what Russia had hoped to achieve. And here we go. We have lost all faith and trust in any of
and
our
that's
institutions.
Iris' point, right, Aaron?
And
yes.
that is one of the scariest thing about the weakness of democratic systems. We lose trust in our institutions. We always believe in conspiracy theories. We are in trouble.
They found 8 bombs, none of which went off. The addresses were crudely written or misspelled. And now we have the country internally fighting with each other mm-hmm. to see who's blaming the other. And that's why I think it's somebody on the outside.
But and you may be right. But no matter what we think, everybody's is projecting something.
Oh, sure.
Exactly.
Yeah, but that would be part of the motivation.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, let's do one more letter, and then I want to get to the stock market because Rich has to leave at 10, and I want to
okay.
talk
And we need Rich for the stock
yeah,
market?
Yeah, we do.
We blame me for the stock market.
Hey. Ryan says, "Ask Alan in the rest of the roundtable. What about end?
Oh, okay.
It must say end.
You're not all out of this.
Roundtable. What Maxine Waters' rhetoric of aggression?" And then he goes on, and Ryan goes on with a lot of other people. Ask Hillary Clinton on civility.
Holder, yeah.
I understand that Alan blindly hates Donald Trump and all of that. Okay. And
see, I will say, I on purpose wanted to stay away from that. I understand his point or her point, but the idea that there's been inflammatory rhetoric on both sides, but I wanted to stay away from that because I think that's exactly the road that you don't want to go down.
But Rich, isn't there a false equivalency between Maxine, you know, Waters
you
and the
that.
President of the United States?
Yeah.
I mean, it's you know, we're talking about an ant, you know, and a giant. Not a giant intellectually, but a giant anyway in terms
and
of power.
And you could also point out the fact that Maxine Waters only hit the headline once President Trump had a very ugly response to the loss of American soldiers in Chad. And he was so inadequate in his response to African Americans in her district and how they grieved for their losses.
Well, it's the district she represents. It's not the district she lives in, right?
Okay. So that is the main point?
No.
Not the main point. She was attacked and that she speaks on behalf of African Americans that didn't have a voice.
And that she has a low IQ.
And that she needs to live in a certain district. That is the response?
No.
Not about the moral underpinning of how this president responds to the loss of human life of American soldiers that die in a mission in Chad that was mismanaged?
Well, let me understand. So are we now defending Maxine Waters when she goes out and says, you know, go confront people in the grocery store and in the restaurant, and we're saying that that's okay?
No, I'm not. I think that hurts the cause tremendously. I agree with Vera generally, but I don't agree with that as a tactic. I think most Americans believe that you go out to dinner with your wife, you should not expect to be verbally attacked at a restaurant.
Okay, so let me be a little bit of provocative on this. There are those people who think that this president is leading us into a totalitarian state. And so, therefore, my question would be, rather than have a revolution or a civil war, does it make sense to take your PR opportunities where you can get them?
What do you mean by PR opportunities?
Walking up to these guys and saying, you should be ashamed of yourself.
Once you go down that road, Alan, then you end up where we are now. I mean, I just don't think that's the right way to air political differences.
I agree with you on the fact that President Trump has decades of experience behaving like this, and he is an exceptionally vicious bully. And as a woman, you never win. You always are put into a position of being ridiculed if you are quiet or if you speak up for what you say, how you say it. If you're African American, Latino, or Asian, it doesn't matter. You cannot win. So I agree we have to find a different way. But to say that Maxine Waters is fundamentally at fault
has a low IQ.
And, you know, these kinds of insults. It is simply wrong because President Trump controls, in essence, these messages that override nearly everything, and he uses bully mechanisms to marginalize others that hope to speak up. And to then blame the others that try to find and get their message out there is simply not equivalent to what President Trump does.
Okay, and before Rich leaves, I have to read this one from Eric. I have to say, I was terribly relieved to hear some words of reason from Rich this morning. Blaming any public official or that official's policy or trying to make these bombing attempts only give strength to violence on either side, WAMC is disappointing me. With political rhetoric being pounded into my head daily, and I'm very seriously thinking of changing my votes to Republican.
Well, good luck.
We should be ashamed.
Well, good luck with that. All right. So what's your deal? You can stay? You can't stay? You have to go?
I can stay for a few minutes after.
Okay, great. All right, so let's take a break.
Do you bill by the hour or by part of the hour?
So those of you who want to get the letters in, get them in quick.
Yeah, all right. So we're going to go to Ray with news, and we'll come back. We'll let you dance a little bit, and we'll come back, and we'll talk about the stock market and take more letters and then the other issues of the day. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Good morning. Welcome back to The Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Alan Chartok is here. Rich Honan, Vera Karius-Kelly, Judy Patrick, and Ira Fussfeld. Let's go to
I'm lowering myself into my
you're
chair.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for staying, Rich. Leave when you have to, but
don't go.
But don't, you know, go whatever works. So U.S. stock markets fell sharply Wednesday, erasing all gains for the year and muddying one of President Trump's favorite talking points 2 weeks before the midterm elections. The technology-heavy Nasdaq fell 4.4% Wednesday, its worst one-day drop since the financial crisis. The index has slid more than 12% since the end of August. The Standard & Poor's 500 stock index, which tracks a broader group of U.S. companies, has lost $2 trillion in value since late September, down 9%. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, meanwhile, lost 608 points Wednesday. It's down 8.3% in the past 3 weeks. The financial swoon threatens to undermine
swoon,
yeah. To undermine a market rise for which Trump has frequently claimed credit and to highlight controversial aspects of Trump's agenda, including tariffs many companies are blaming for their struggles and a tax cut that polls suggest the public views is inadequately helpful for the middle class.
You want the talking points first, and then
okay.
So the talking points would be that
are these your talking points?
Yeah, no, the typical right wing talking point. Well, you know, let's just go to the real stuff. I will say part of the I think if Aaron Pasidi was here, he'd probably say at least part of this is some of it's geopolitical. Some aside from the tariffs, some of it is the tariffs.
He'll be with us tomorrow, by the way.
Okay, you have to assume that a significant part of it is the increase in interest rates, right? Which as interest rates go up, people move money out of the market. But part of the problem, you know, when presidents do this, when Trump does this, you live by the Dow, you die by the Dow, right? And I will also say, you know, even as a conservative and as somebody who, you know, who in my business we watch the market, you know, the market in some ways, I think it's a surrogate for kind of public opinion. I really do. I think that it's not exact and it's not immediate. But if the market stayed down for, you know, between now and the midterms, I don't know that would not – that's got to hurt Trump. That's got to hurt the Republicans. You know, whether it stays that way, I don't know.
Yeah, what do you think about the housing market is one of the major concerns, obviously, right? I mean, the numbers have gone down a little bit and – that industry is particularly concerned, right?
And again, I'm not the expert. If Aaron were here, I think he'd probably feel honor bound to say that's also part of the increase in interest rates, right? So as interest rates go up, mortgage rates go up, it's more expensive to buy a house. You'd also probably say the same thing about the housing market, as you say about the stock market, that it has been a little overheated, right? And there's time for it to cool off. But yeah, I think that to the extent this, we've learned a lot about the market is that, you know, one day, one week doesn't determine a trend, right?
Well, the housing market trend has been going for about 2 months.
Correct.
You know, in terms of going down. And they're concerned about the tariffs as well because of some of the building materials that have increased in cost.
Exactly. Look, the tariffs, there's no question that the tariffs are going to be a drag on the economy. And I think that was, that was a known thing. And I think one of the things Trump said was, If we're gonna have this discussion, this tariff discussion, and you could argue about whether or not, excuse me, we should. The time to do it is when our economy is strong, not when our economy is weak. So I'm willing to pay the price to try and smooth out the tariff issue a little bit. But I think I agree with everybody that if the market is way down at the time of the midterms, that's not going to be a great thing for the Republicans.
I think for the tariffs to bite, really, it'll take till about January. So I don't think the midterms are going to be affected by the tariffs to that extent, with the exception, perhaps, in some of the farming communities are directly affected already. And some of the construction industries or the ones that are affected by steel and aluminum.
Yeah, except but I think the administration, in a most unconservative move, has been directing, you know, funds toward at least towards farmers and probably more to construction, which, you know, Alan will say, well, isn't that, you know, a step towards socialism?
That's not a bad thing.
Corporate welfare, we call that.
Right. And President Trump has taken an unusual move of criticizing the Fed chairman on this one, which is
he just appointed.
Yeah,
his own Fed.
His own Fed chairman.
Yeah. And you know, many people believe that the stock market was way too high and that this is a correction. Mm-hmm. Although, last time I looked this morning, it's back up over 180 points. Maybe it's changed, but
Long way to go, though.
It doesn't take that long. I mean, we've seen it can get erased in one day and it can turn around in one day.
So. Yes, but we've had several weeks now.
Yeah, but it's still up. I mean, if you want to start looking at, you know, since the election or, you know, it's up. It's going to go down as interest rates go up.
It all depends on when you want to retire, Rich.
Right. I don't have to worry about that. I'm just going to continue working until.
Well, I don't think
until
you have
gone.
To worry about it at all. Yeah, ever.
Well. Okay. I'm not going to have that discussion.
He's got the $1,000 an hour.
Yes.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. All right.
You have to remember, when we send somebody a bill, they treat it like that's our first offer. You know, that's like our opening offer.
Can you confirm or deny this? When I used to call our libel lawyer, I always pictured him picking up the phone with one hand and starting a watch with the other hand. Is there a stopwatch right next to your desk?
It's like the guys who play chess in New York City.
You have one of those.
It's that kind of clock.
So then I was right.
Yes.
All right, let's go to some letters.
Okay, thank you, Joe. Okay, here we go. Steven says, Rich, Obama addressed well-documented and long... Rich. Obama addressed well-documented and long-standing inequities in the U.S. economy and criminal justice system. Trump is a fear-mongering racist whose primary drive is to divide us. Get the difference?
Well, as long as we're going to have that kind of open and candid discussion, sure. You know, I think Trump is addressing a lot of open issues as well. It's just that you don't like the way he's addressing them.
Oh, which social ills is he addressing?
I think by addressing the economy, he's addressing a lot of social ills.
Oh, I see. Especially that tax cut that we all benefited so much
and
from.
And which he now knows is such...
Did you not? Did you not benefit from that? Because I know I didn't. So if there's anybody else who didn't, I'd love for them to be in my club.
Which he now knows is a chinchilla around his neck. That's a long thing, of course, analogy. But the fact of the matter is, he knows this is bad news, and that's why he threw out this thing the other day about let's have a real middle class tax cut now.
Yeah, because now he's worried because the temporary stimulus will run out by the end of this year, and then we have this growing debt that we have to pay back. And in addition to that, then the large argument will arise, well, how are we going to pay back all that debt? Let's take away what we call these entitlements from the people that are most vulnerable. How about reducing access to medical care from people that really can't, like how about people with disabilities? Let's go after them, perhaps.
Or people that
have pre-existing conditions broadly. I mean, this is the path that we knew was coming, and we're on it now, and I'm deeply concerned about
and
that.
And then Patricia writes a letter which starts, interestingly, go, Vera, go. Good morning. Just wanted to say I agree 100% with Vera generally and specifically in support of Maxine Waters. Democracy is a messy business with flaws and mistakes and profound disagreements, but it's still the best way for the people individually and together to be heard.
I think we all agree with that one. Right?
Oh, are you coming around?
I was always in favor of democracy.
Just went out on a limb.
Yeah, right. I'm gonna take that tough position.
Oh, wow. All right. You sure you want that on the record?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
And then Joe says, good morning, panel. Why are there no voices in the media or government calling these bomb attacks by the name they best deserve? Assassination attempts or assassination threats. If any of these bombs had detonated and the recipients had been killed, there would be no hesitation. Why the reticence?
I will say, everyone's life obviously is important, but in the investigation, there were some really interesting reporting that the stories that we did not hear a lot about was about the package that went to President Obama.
Yeah.
And that is an assassination attempt against a former president of the United States.
Yes.
That brings it to a whole different level than anybody else.
Yep.
Again, not saying that those lives are not equally important. They are. But as far as law enforcement and Secret Service and what is engaged in that investigation, there was not a peep out of that office yesterday because it was directly to the President of the United States.
Well, what about the one to Chappaqua? I
mean, the one to Chappaqua, and Bill Clinton was home, but it was addressed to Hillary Clinton.
But still.
Well, absolutely. No, well, absolutely. Also they're taking...
That one was terrifying.
It was, and also it was... But because of that, they were going to former presidents... The homes of former presidents both were intercepted much earlier in the process because they were done overnight at facilities far, far away by the Secret Service, far, far away from the actual residences of the
And to the writer's point, I did hear, I believe, Mika this morning use the word assassination.
We heard from Zachary, who said, it's time for us as citizens to look into Trump as a dangerous individual and especially a politician to the future of our country. I intended to buy a car sticker, Trump Lies Matter. which to my surprise is already available in on the internet. I will attach.
Damn it! There goes Shark Tank. Go ahead.
I will attach it to three sides of my both cars and carry it for the next 2 years, and hopefully not later. I hope it will make readers to think deeper, at least for the moment of reading. It is propaganda, stupid. I was also surprised that there isn't a call yet from some Democratic activists for mass anti-Trump demonstration in Washington so this individual can see how loved he is. You know, that's a very interesting point from Zachary. Mm-hmm. In the beginning, you remember the Women's March, and you remember all of us, mm-hmm. women and men, who got there, and mm-hmm. you couldn't get through the streets. It's as if that had never happened, and you never see that kind of mass protest now.
Because, in part, that strategy has not worked. It has not helped. It has not done anything because what women were called shortly thereafter was an angry mob.
Yeah, I don't know that I agree with you that it hasn't worked. We won't know that until 2 weeks at the election. I think it really juiced up a large portion of this country who had not been heard from before, and I think it has carried on. I see it in local congressional races and the turnout.
It has mobilized
a lot of people.
What I was referring to is sort of reorganizing continuous marches. That has not been something that Americans have responded to.
I hate to agree with Ira about anything, but I have to say,
you think it works.
One of the I think it does work, and mm-hmm. I think my disappointment is it hasn't continued.
You know, I'm not sure. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You know, I think that we're not going to really advance here until we stop referring to Trump supporters with disdain and calling them stupid. I think that's not a good way to have a conversation and turn anybody around. Let's not call people stupid from either side.
Well, I don't think we can turn the core Trump voters around anyways. What I'm concerned about is independents who want to have a society in which they can live and feel strongly about their communities, about their families, about their productivity, about what they contribute to this country. And I think that is the group that I'm waiting to swing entirely toward, away from Trump. And I think we begin to see that. I'm very confident that we will see that because they reject this sort of propaganda or explosive polarizing language.
Well, can I ask Rich, because he still identifies himself as a Trump supporter.
And a conservative.
And an independent.
He does whatever just to stir it up with us.
We hear so many of the Trump supporters wanted to go with Trump because he was going to shake it up in Washington. He was going to knock down all the walls because they, among other things, didn't like or didn't trust government. And what doesn't add up for me is how the frequency with which he lies demonstrably, not just political lies, but factual lies that can be easily disproved. Why has that not shaken the base who didn't want their government lying to them? I mean, this guy is just incredible the way he lies day after day.
I think the answer is we actually feel that I'll speak on your end, right? I feel he is, you know, you say he lies all the time. I feel like he is the most transparent. I feel like I know more about what he's thinking than I've ever known about what any president has thought. I feel like I get more of his unvarnished? Yes, unvarnished, unfiltered.
But is that a good thing?
Oh, I think it's a good thing that I'm getting it. Now, I don't agree with it all. I don't like it all. But I mean that's an amazing thing.
What about the lying? What about the lying?
I'm willing to start with the raw material and sift my way through it myself and determine what I think is a lie, what I think is his, puffery, what I think is just his very elliptical way of talking, which, those of us who, used to follow him on CNBC were used to that. I'd rather make that filtering decision myself than have it go through, like we were talking before, six levels of speech writers and a teleprompter and then spinners after that. Because Trump is kind of unspinnable. Sarah Sanders can do what she wants, but I would. So the answer is, some of those things are incorrect. Some of them may be outright lies. I don't know. What I like is the transparency, the lack of filter, and the idea that I'm being given the opportunity to make those decisions on my own.
Quote, he says what he thinks. But of course, if you look back on the great despots in history, they said what they thought also. So how does that justify?
Yeah, but a lot of
the
them
fact
didn't,
fact,
Alan. A lot of them.
Give me some specific examples.
Listen, when we talked about health care for a long time. Let's fix health care. And then all of a sudden, after somebody was elected, then it was let's fix health care insurance. It turned from healthcare to healthcare insurance. That was a big change for a lot of us, and that was something I feel that wasn't terribly transparent during the campaign. The thing about Trump is, I know you guys dislike him, and for a lot of good reasons, but you can't say you're terribly surprised.
Uh-huh, that's correct.
Right? From the primaries,
yes,
to the general till now.
But let me, I'm sorry, and this is a more surfacey question, and I apologize for it, but I'm just curious. Because I'm interested in what you say of that you see him unvarnished, but do you feel that he has a grasp and a full command of the issues that are on his plate / the national agenda?
All right, let me give you the flip answer, but there's a little bit to, and one of the answers is, how much do you need? Okay, which everybody's like, oh, how could you say that? Really, how these issues, we kind of all know there's only two ways to stand on a lot of these issues, right? It's either big government or small government. So either more entitlements or less entitlements. It's either we're doing the right thing in the inner cities or we're doing the wrong thing. So do I think he has enough of a grasp to deal with those issues? Yeah, I do.
So,
I'll also say,
but you can communicate that, and it doesn't seem like he can.
Oh, I see. I think he does, Joe. I think I know exactly where he stands on things.
So the great despots in history. So I want to go back to that for a moment. You knew where they stood. You knew what they were saying. Jews should be killed. Something should be happening.
They couldn't be voted out. He can be voted out.
Yeah, well, that's
and by
correct,
the way, there's also been a lot of things he's tried to do that he couldn't do because, of course,
here's one thing I wanted to say. In the domestic arena, you can make the argument that you don't have to know the specificity to the extent that, you make the argument large, small government. That is entirely inadequate for the international arena. When you look at Yemen, Saudi Arabia, Brexit, and so on, and that there you really need to know the complexity of issues, and he's entirely inadequate.
And I think his greatest triumphs have been on the foreign policy
stage.
He has had no triumphs. He's lying to you.
He has had no triumphs.
He's not lying to me about the fact that that ISIS has a lot less power than it had before. He's not lying to me about the fact that he's very supportive of Israel. He's not lying to me about the fact that he didn't like the Iran deal and he wanted to get out of it, and he did. He's not lying to me about the fact that he opposes Islamic fundamentalism, for whatever that means. I feel like he's been very clear.
No, he is not, because he doesn't understand that Islamic fundamentalism is sponsored by the Wahhabis in Saudi Arabia, and he is transactional entirely in his interactions with Saudi Arabia, and we have been bombing in assistance with the Saudis, the Yemenis, and that is where you will get a lot of the Islamic fundamentalists. And he has also not understood what is happening with Iraq and Iran and the gains that Iran is currently making in Iraq. So he's bungled the entire Middle East policy. And if you remotely say that it's okay to know who your enemies are based on whether they're Islamists of a certain kind or something else, then you are entirely misunderstanding how foreign policy works.
Listen,
Rich.
I think anybody who sees the situation he was given in Syria, that I think was a bungled situation way before he got there. I think anybody who sees the Iran deal, which was a bungled deal well before he got there, would say that he has been dealing with the hand that he's been dealt with. I think he understands enough to be able to advance our interests, which I don't think had been advanced under the previous administration.
I don't think our interests in the Middle East have been advanced at all. I agree with you that Middle East policy in this country has been bungled for decades. And in that sense, I think we would agree that both, you know, starting with the G.W. Bush presidency into Obama, into Trump, it's been bungled. But do not misread the Middle East policy as having improved at all in the Middle East.
I think it has for America.
This is a shocking statement from somebody who clearly does not understand what is happening in the Middle East.
I think that America is a safer place than it was when faced with Middle Eastern threats.
Oh, well, I'm glad you're believing that.
Well, the underlying, to me, the underlying, there have been presidents with whom I've disagreed, and many of us, you're trying to get us off the air,
no,
Joe.
I'm just ready to pop popcorn, go ahead.
If he is trying to make a case on a policy issue in domestically or foreign, I want to be confident that at least I'm hearing him tell me the truth about it. And then it's up to me to make a decision whether I agree with him or disagree with him. I don't believe a word of the man says. I've said that on this program, I think before he was elected. But so I think I'm as out front on that. But, you know, I listened to him, I don't even remember what it was about, the other day. And it was not even a major topic. But I remember thinking to myself, I don't know that I believe what he's saying. And how can the country go through wondering if their president is lying to them?
You don't think he's telling the truth on, for example, his position on immigration?
So I don't know. I might be. I don't think he's telling the truth when he says there are Middle Eastern terrorists in the middle of this caravan. And then finally he says, no, I don't have any proof. I mean, he's for days. And he and Fox and friends are saying there are these terrorists from the Middle East and Mexico in the middle of a caravan when. And sadly, a lot of people believe it. Now, is it true? Perhaps, but he doesn't know that.
But I don't think that's the main thrust. I don't think that's the main thrust of his argument. I think the main thrust of his argument is something, and you might call it superficial, but the idea that, you know, it starts with borders, it starts with protection of the borders, and I don't think that's a terribly difficult concept. Tell me the truth
that on which the facts that you're making your decisions are based are accurate.
But it does not start with borders. Let me point out the fact that we have enormous numbers of people purchasing drugs that are coming up from Central America, in addition to, you know, of course, China sending, you know, fentanyl through the mail. But Central American drugs and South American, Central American drugs coming through Mexico into the United States, we have lots of customers for that. And then we do Mexico the favor of returning the weapons that drug cartels can purchase in this country, and we and people bring them back into Mexico. We create a lot of violence ourselves in Mexico. And to think of desperate people simply as we must block them at the border does not even remotely adequately address the underlying fundamental issues, which are economic underdevelopment. So if we don't want people to come, let's address economic development issues. Let's build sustainable economic communities. And let's consider the drug cartels, which we have failed to adequately address. So there are many issues that we can discuss, but let's be factual on what causes people to migrate.
I'm going to give you the last word, Vera, because we have to go. We're late. We got to get to the news. My thanks to everybody. Rich, thanks for saying, Rich. Appreciate it. Vera, Judy, Ira, Alan, thank you. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.